Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And as you know, love letters can be to anyone for any reason at any time at all. It is your truth put to paper and making somebody else's life richer when that sparkle of an envelope ends up on the mail pile. And I'm going to go to our guest today because she has so much to say. I met her not too long ago by telephone, and the sound of her voice and that crack of a laugh just made me know that the world was in good shape somehow. So I asked her to come talk to me, and her name is Michelle Spitz, and her business is Woman of Her Word. She uses this voice for good. She uses this voice for so many things, and she donates her voice for charitable causes. May I just start right in with you and talk about you? When did you first realize you had a voice that was actually a piece of art equipment?
I think that started in high school, long time ago.
But what about when you were a little girl?
I used to sing, and singing was my sort of my tool for a lot of things.
Well, but you did.
But my voice and doing voice work in general was my passion, next to singing.
How did that become your passion? What did you realize you could do with it?
I decided that in high school I wanted to do broadcasting.
Oh,
and that I spent some time around doing work a little bit in radio stations. Then I went to USC and I studied broadcasting and ended up graduating at San Francisco State in the communications department. However, I did not utilize that degree for a long period of time. So I ended up detouring into many other things in life.
Like what?
I ended up detoured into real estate by
default. Oh, it's the actual real-world business kind of things also. Okay.
And all along, I've always used my voice for many things. My voice sort of dictates how I function in life and business and personal relationships.
You know, I'm wondering about that because when you just said real estate, I'm thinking that a voice like yours, when you get on the phone with somebody, the message is, I can take care of this. I'm in charge.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right. So essentially the
nothing timorous about you.
No. It takes you a lot of places, but it didn't. It wasn't until a few years ago that I decided to utilize my voice for important things and to finally do something different. So I've spent a lot of my time doing narration for charitable causes, and I also voice projects for the blind. And so I therefore become the voice for the eyes that can't see.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of my most rewarding endeavors in my lifetime thus far.
How did that start? And tell us what, because you said something that I remember the other day about using your voice in doing these projects for the blind, that you can't be too forceful in a way.
That's right.
And that struck me as really interesting. Okay, so talk about how you started that, how you got to that, and what it requires you to do.
Well, it started with, I actually started to reach out to different foundations and nonprofit organizations that I thought I'd like to support with my voice. And it was sort of a unique concept. And one of the first ones I started with was Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't had any intention of knowing what exactly that would turn out like. But the first project I was offered was to be the voice of the donor wall for their new dormitory, which is something very unusual. It's where a wall is built, an art installation, and all the donors' names are there.
Oh, a donor wall, yes.
Yeah, paragraphs of gratitude, so on and so forth. So that was the first project I did with that as far as the blind community.
Then where's this wall?
This is in the new dormitory built in San Rafael for the facility where the dogs meet their companions for the first time for 2 weeks.
So the dormitory is where the dogs live? Oh, you didn't say that. A doggy dorm. I didn't realize.
Yeah. The
dogs
make that clear. And the companions. They meet for the first time and they train. And then they're then released into the world.
Oh, so they live together during the training. Yeah. Well, that makes sense because the dogs have to get used to people.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's very, very intensified. But it's a beautiful facility. And they gutted it and they built it from ground up. So that was the first project. But forthcoming after that, I became the voice of their newsletter that goes out to their blind alumni who do not have computers. And then,
in what form does it go out?
It goes out in CD form.
Oh.
And I suppose they listen to it anywhere else they'd like to. It'll eventually be posted to the website as well. But this is a very comprehensive 30-page newsletter that's voiced in about 4 hours. and then delivered. And it's delivered in a certain manner and compressed in a certain manner that the blind hear it in a certain capacity and a certain pace because they hear things a little bit differently.
So, yes, I want to know about that. That just didn't occur to me.
Well, it's not something that we necessarily all understand, but they take information very, very quickly in that capacity. The other thing that we were talking about, which after these type of projects, which are ongoing for me, I got involved because someone had asked me to do an audio description for a short film.
Okay.
And that was a new experience altogether, which I fell madly in love with, and now I do regularly. And that is where, whether it's a documentary or it's a film with people acting, you're going to be listening to those voices, the blind community, with a headset on. And they're going to take in that information in one ear, and in the other ear, they're going to hear someone like myself, where a script is written that supplements that dialogue, and it describes everything that they can't see. So essentially, you are the scenery for them. However, you also, as we spoke of, you are not allowed to infuse too much emotion because you compete either with the narrator or the actors.
Oh, and you don't want it to be your emotion.
That's right.
You want them to have space for their own, is that?
That's correct. And they're really, what they're doing is they're melting both forms of information sort of in between their ears, and it's merging into some scenario for them. So they're grasping it in a different way. It's the same thing in live theater.
But the actors are putting in plenty of emotion.
Absolutely. As would the narrator. I've done children's films as well. So the voice of the narrator has a lot of highs and lows and sort of defines what it is that the story
So you've got to fit your voice into the orchestration of the entire thing.
But you also can't be too flatlined where they're not tuned in to want to hear what the scenery is because that means so much to them. It really is the most, one of the most important pieces.
Can you give us an example of how you would describe scenery?
It would depend. If it was, there's a film that I recently did called Driving Blind, which is a beautiful story about two brothers who have a particular eye disease and they take a road trip around the United States. Most likely they will eventually go blind. So they take this road trip together and there's an enormous amount of scenery as they take this road trip. So they can see the United States before they lose their vision. So, for example, I would be describing all the scenery and the cities that they've gone to.
Oh, I see. So, wait, so this accompanies them like on a bus tour?
It's not a bus. They took a road trip themselves.
So it's really the relationship
between them. It's sort of the dialogue, the warmth, the concern, the fear, meeting other people that have their disease and have already lost their vision. And then describing them jumping off into the river together, or the beautiful trees, or the street signs that are actually quite humorous at times as they go across the United States. But it has a momentum, it has a pacing, and the way the script is written, it's timed, it's very diligent in between every scene and when they're speaking and what we need to describe. And that's up to the discretion of the writer. I don't write the scripts.
Oh, I see.
A professional writes them. And you have the headset on, and I hear them speaking, and I hear the music, and I have the script, and I insert that information. And then it has a flow to it. So it has to be easy on the ears, but it has to be articulate, and some emotion, but not too much.
So actually, what I said was kind of silly, because I'm thinking of a bus tour. And scenery being described, but you don't but you can be in your room happily listening to this.
You'd be watching this at home on a DVD, or you'd be in the movie theater and you have the headset on. And this is typically what happens when the films go commercial, and there are theaters that are willing to provide the headsets for the blind. Then you will have the opportunity to use the audio description or video description. Otherwise, you could rent it. And you could get it through DVDs, and it'll be an accompanying piece that people will then have access to. And that's the ultimate goal. And it comes in the form of newsletters, which is something entirely different, which is information providing. Then it comes in accommodating films and other pieces, documentaries. It comes in so many different ways. The television also has the comedies that are also audio described, and that requires a little bit more emotion because you have to be sort of in character with their characters. That's a little different.
So if somebody is not sighted and is sitting with a family watching something on television, I mean, why would a person without sight be in the movie theater or watching television?
Oh, because they want to have the same experience.
Of being in the theater and...
Well, sure.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
this never occurred to me.
Oh, yeah. It's for them. They're taking in information in a different way. Whereas, for example, the deaf, when they go, they have the ability to watch the films.
Oh, and sure. Then they have the
arm that comes
yes.
up. And now there's a new thing that is being provided, which is called the Silver Window. And it's a drop screen, which you will see someone physically doing sign language. In fact, mm-hmm. we just saw this on Google Glass last week at USC. It was really quite remarkable. So you could have the audio description in one ear mm-hmm. with a piece that's above your ear. Mm-hmm. You can also see the silver screen drop and watch the sign mm-hmm. language. It's pretty remarkable. It is the future.
Yes. Amazing. Now, what is it that you're doing in the field of, because you told me this also, and actually my feeling after that first time we spent together, yeah. just visiting, is I don't know how you do so much in a week. You've got your own private timeline that most of us don't have. You're doing so many. One of the things you were doing is you're working on a program that makes mm-hmm. art available to everybody,
right.
regardless of physical capacity to see it or hear it.
That's right. There's a couple of things. I'm very involved in underwriting programs for the arts,
right.
like I have for SF Jazz, which is to do ticket underwriting for the blind to have access to any of the shows they would like. And that way they have the ability to go without the financial means, they have the ability to go because I make that mm-hmm. available to them. Mm-hmm. The JCC, I underwrite a program as well, and those communities are a little bit different. They could be children, they could be battered women, they might be homeless. There are a number of different communities we reach out to, wheelchair-bound. And the Rhoda Goldman, I have the elderly that have the opportunity to go as well.
So, but a huge part of this has to be transporting people back and forth to these things.
Yes. Now, for Lighthouse, they walk to SF Jazz, they're two blocks away. They also utilize my underwriting at the JCC because they have so many programs here. They have great arts and lectures and what have right. you. They have taxi vouchers.
Uh-huh.
And the other communities make their way there. I have made transportation available to the Rhoda Goldman so that they have transportation to go on a bus together.
Ground transportation is a huge thing
mm-hmm.
today,
yep.
given the number of people.
And they said they make it. They're just so honored and grateful. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is I am in the process of creating an initiative in which the hotel concierge are made aware of what the accessible arts are. So that means destinations, that could be Universal Studios, it could be Disney, it could be the theaters, live theater where there's audio description, movie theaters, parades. There's another gentleman who's offering surfing lessons.
So in particular for people who need audio or visual?
Well, we're defining that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, my goal is to work with the deaf and the blind. The wheelchair-bound is another community which I would like to address as well. So the idea is when they get to one of the hotels, there's an access concierge they've already been in contact with.
Hotels have that.
No, we're creating this.
Oh, I see. That's
this is the initiative, is that we create this. Mm-hmm. It's in place. The concierge are volunteers. This is an act of volunteerism. This is not to be a paid position. This is so that the volunteers in the concierge community are so giving and luxury-oriented
mm-hmm.
that they look at the other side of it and provide the same luxury to the disabled community. But it goes back to the same subject matter, which is the arts. So once again, we're focusing on the arts, the audience, and then also those that are in the arts and those that are disabled also that are acting. And that's another community I also support. So it really is full circle. It comes all the way around.
At what point? I mean, did you just kind of slide into the... yeah,
well,
because, you know, you're a busy woman and you're doing a lot of things. How did you move yourself into that particular area of disability? I mean, sometimes there's something
in
a person's life that...
No, this is not particularly my... This question is asked to me almost every day of my life.
I can see why.
And it is not a personal reference for me.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say that some people joke and say, if you live in San Francisco, of course, I was born with a pink section in my hands on the Sunday paper. My life has been about the arts.
Oh, and your life has also been about information about what's going on in cities.
That's right.
Your father, okay, just talk about that
that's
if you
right.
want to for a minute.
That's right.
Yes,
my father,
I forgot about that.
That's right.
So.
My father, my grandfather started a magazine called Guest Informant, mm-hmm. which was a luxury
So already
hardback.
That's in the hotels.
That's right. It's a hardback publication.
Yes, I forgot.
And it's a biannual publication that informs each city, what's right. happening in the city.
Yes, of
and
course.
Then it advertises things as well. So that's more of tourism, which actually sort of falls into an interesting section of the concierge initiative I'm trying to create.
Absolutely. That's right. What I'm, yes.
But I definitely was born with a pink section in my hands. I've mm-hmm. been going to the arts since I was a child, mm-hmm. and my passion is the arts universally, whether it's theater, whether it's dance, or whether it's museums, anything at all. So
your parents took you?
They took me, but I really did a lot on my own. My mother was a childhood. My mother, at a very young age, wanted to go into acting. Mm-hmm. She didn't pursue much of that. My father's background, lineage-wise, is a lot of musicians, symphony, things like that. My mother's background, her brother, family, acting. Mm-hmm. But nobody went to the arts as much as I did. Mm-hmm. I literally am addicted. I can't help myself. But interestingly enough, along the way, I found myself sort of kidnapping people in my whole life. And those that were financially unable to go, or elderly or younger people I wanted to educate, I wanted to have the experience with them. And it excited me to be able to share that with people. So I've really kidnapped people most of my life to do that. So it's no wonder that I ended up deciding to underwrite tickets for programs so all these people can go at my expense and my generosity. And
so
my
you're essentially an angel with guest informant in the background, so you know what to do with that. I mean, that's an incredibly generous spirit that you have. I'm not asking you to answer that because I'm sure that's going to...
No, but I always say my life's work is my heart's work.
Okay.
It really, truly is. Yes. There's no question about it.
Okay.
There's nothing that gives me more pleasure. Absolutely nothing. And then to be able to get involved, I have another very dear friend who has a company, Meets the Biz. And you and I have talked about David Zimmerman, and he teaches handicapped actors and actresses.
Let's talk about some of the people.
Very interesting.
Because, yes.
Very interesting. My exposure.
How does he
to,
do that?
Well, he hires well-known actors and actresses, or people in the profession that are in a different position, and they come in and they're paid to teach these communities. And the communities are very well-established already, actors and actresses, and that classroom could consist of blind, deaf, quadriplegic, could be small people. It's a combination of many, cerebral palsy, all
just
of
them. Non-standard.
No, not at all. And it's amazing. And what had happened was,
does he teach them to do?
Oh, each class is different. Improv, sometimes characters, sometimes also anything has to do in the acting world, as if they were going to any acting school.
Okay, so my question is, why does this have to be separate acting classes?
For community?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I think this community just feels very safe and enjoys it. And David has worked so many years with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
He teaches currently at one of the schools out in LA County where he teaches all Down syndrome adults. And they have different art programs they go to. And it really infuses so much joy in them. But it's not that they aren't already talented, because some of the people in the class are already on television shows.
Well, that's what you indicated, that they're already actors. So.
Yep, and maybe some not quite into it yet, or have in the mm-hmm. past, or maybe their disease
so
took
his,
them
his
over.
So his sensibilities are such that they can be comfortable and safe with him.
And everyone else in the class, because they all have some form of a disability.
Right.
I think I was probably the only one in there, next to David, of course, who doesn't have one. And I found myself thinking, this is very interesting. I wonder if they're comfortable with me, and I'm still trying to get comfortable with this. And then after my first class, I was taken over. I was mm-hmm. emotionally taken over to watch these people with such devotion to their art, despite their disability, mm-hmm. was probably one of the most eye-opening experiences I've had that led me further down the road of supporting the world of disability. That really was where it started. But I'd already been underwriting tickets for a couple of years because I look at different people. I basically go into audiences and I study audiences. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I look to see if there are wheelchairs in there. I look to see if there's blind people. I look to see about the demographics of the audience, the older, the younger, ethnicity.
And you're looking at, it's just out of curiosity and interest, or you've got plans, Kim? Or both?
Always curious, as sort of a personal study. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, how can I get more people here that normally wouldn't be able to get here?
Uh-huh.
How can I make this more diversified? And that is my goal.
So you have to look at seating and exits and actresses mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. lavatories.
Yes.
And
just so there is enough space, and they can clear out space mm-hmm. depending upon where they are for wheelchair mm-hmm. access.
All theaters can do this now?
For the most part, they have mm-hmm. to be ADA complied, mm-hmm. right? But it may not be ideal for everybody. It may mm-hmm. not be ideal for the blind if they have a guide dog, although I've been told that my community that I support has showed up at the JCC with their dogs, and I hear it's quite special. Then you have cane users, which are a little bit different. The cane mm-hmm. users aren't quite as integrated. They're a little bit more introverted, whereas the dog users are very extroverted. They want to talk to people. Different needs. Mm-hmm. But I think that in the earlier years, I used to watch people. I used to watch a blind gentleman who used to go into SF Jazz year after year, and I watched him. I was fascinated by him. And his body language and his response to the music was so extraordinary. And he'd come with someone that accompanied him all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was apparent to me that either he was one of the biggest music lovers on the planet, or he himself was a musician.
Oh, that yes.
That's how integrated he was. And I remember also going to Zellerbach, going to ballet there, and the same girl would show up, quadriplegic, absolutely, with a very profound wheelchair and taking up quite a bit of room. And also, although she couldn't move much, her body language and her facial expressions was incredibly profound to watch. And the joy, and she came by herself, and I used to watch her event after event. And I these are the people that I look for. And mm-hmm. then the elderly. I want to see them get out because they don't get out as much as mm-hmm. I'd like to see them.
You know, I was once at a concert many, many years ago. It was Tom Rigney when he was with the Sundogs. And their music was so joyous. Mm-hmm. And I forget where this was, but he is just permission to dance. And you cannot sit still. And he, at certain points, would say, come on, everybody, just get up and dance. And suddenly there were four wheelchairs on the dance floor.
Oh.
And people in their wheelchairs kind of rearing them backwards.
I love it.
It was just astounding. It was gorgeous. Nobody needs to be left out.
No, that's very true. Mm-hmm. Nobody needs to be left out. And by the way, on either side, mm-hmm. whether they're in the audience or they are the musicians themselves or performers. You and I talked about the Groove Access, which does wheelchair dance, and they mm-hmm. integrate.
Oh, well, that's what this was. Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. And not only that, there are so many deaf musicians. There are many
oh,
blind
sure.
musicians.
Oh, sure. That we're used to.
Yeah.
Yes.
But to see both,
right.
whether it's in theater.
Seeing people having that
the ability.
Kinetic joy
yeah.
of just dancing no matter what. Because you can, because that's inside you.
It's inside. And yeah. I think those individuals that we don't know what the handicap is, or we don't necessarily have the same experience they have, mm-hmm. something visceral happens for them. And so
that's
they're
what
relating
I mean,
to it.
You can yeah. certainly feel it.
It's
yes.
a visceral. And as far as I'm concerned, my
sometimes
other...
Sometimes you can feel it right in your sternum.
Oh,
you can feel your breastbone yep. vibrating. It's just, oh, I know, it's wonderful.
I can feel it in my throat because I like to sing. I can feel it there.
Yes.
It's very interesting.
Oh, so I have a question for you because will you come back and just talk about some other things another
of
time? Because
I will.
I think we're so not to the end of you. And never. And never
I'm not to the end of me either.
And never will be. And I know there's so much more I want to ask you. We're a little bit running out of time
okay.
for this. But I want to know because I am about this and I always have to ask. Because I too am curious about things.
Yeah.
Who gets your love letter today? If you were to write a love letter right now, which I hope you go home and do, mm-hmm. to whom would you write? I mean, I can see so many people already in your life, including
wow.
your grandfather and guest informant. But who would you do a letter to?
I'm going to say today, mm-hmm. because today is my mother's birthday.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And we spoke
told
of that.
Me about
and I
that.
Just remembered that when you said that. I forgot when I was
yes.
coming over. And my mother's been gone. My mother would be 80 today.
Oh,
my
gosh.
Mom's been gone almost 20 years. But my mother was the biggest believer in me. My mother...
She was also gorgeous. You showed
she
me a
was,
picture
she
of
was.
Her.
But she really... She oh. she was... My father was as well.
Yes.
I always joke. She wanted me to be the next Barbara Walters. Barbara Streisand, because she loved my singing. My father wanted to be the next Barbara Walters. And I wanted to be both. I wanted to stay at CNN during the day, and I wanted
oh.
to be at Carnegie Hall at night.
Well,
but my letter would be to my mother.
You're not done yet, so you And so what will you...
Thank her.
Let's talk about this for a minute,
yeah.
because the beauty of writing to someone who's no
yeah.
longer with us on this earth,
yeah.
the beauty of that is huge, and the importance of that.
Yeah.
In addition to thanking her, what will you thank her for? Because mm. specifics are important. You're so special, doesn't mean too much, although she was.
Yeah.
But what were the things that you would actually thank her for?
It's emotional.
Well, it should
on
be.
On a day like this. For gifting me the same type of heart she has.
Mm-hmm. And that's partly genetic and partly training, right?
It was everything. It was the way I was raised. She had the
How
same,
was that?
Same generosity of spirit, her compassion for all people, mm-hmm. accepting people for who they are,
teaching me the same. It's hard. It's challenging.
It is challenging. But by the way, this isn't an easy task, writing a love letter.
No.
I never said it
no.
was. The fact that it is such work makes it a real work of art.
It does.
Yes.
I remember writing a letter to her and putting it in with her when we buried her.
Mm-hmm.
And saying many things to her at
that
time.
Oh, good.
But I think that I am one of the luckiest people in the world to have been brought into this world with not only her love, but my father's love and the way I was raised. I'm so grateful.
Oh, your exuberance is a gift. Exuberance alone is something that you are a lucky person.
I am. But it was not just being raised with the love for humankind.
Mm-hmm.
And being philanthropic,
mm-hmm.
and not having something to show or prove for it, but just being that existence.
Focusing outward lets you feel good inward, doesn't it?
Yeah. And also believing in me. They both really believed in me. Mm-hmm. She thought I was the cat's meow.
You certainly
and
are.
I
would agree with that.
I wish they were here today to see what I've done.
Okay,
but I know they are.
That's my next point. Because in writing letters to parents and grandparents who are no longer here, I think one of the most wonderful things, and if you feel you can do this, yes, to thank them for everything, but to catch them up on your life.
That's a beautiful idea.
Yes. I mean, you know, dear mom, how old are you now? Or
50.
Don't? Okay. I'm 50 now. You've been gone a long time. A lot has happened, and I want to tell you what
I love that
I'm doing.
I love that idea.
You know, thanks to you and how I was, however you would say it, and let her know each of these things you're doing. And if the letter's too long, which I'm sure it would be, to do in one, what if you just did, you know, one a month for 3 months?
I love that.
Uh-huh.
I love that idea. So many different things to talk about.
Yes.
So many.
Maybe
things.
Separate to your mom and to your dad, maybe together. I don't know. I mean, up to
you. I think together.
Uh-huh.
I think they would be.
Just let them know how life has turned out, because when parents die too young, maybe at any age, I don't know. I think they worry about their children, of course.
Yeah.
What are you going to do without me? And how nice for her to know that you're doing just fine and you're not without her.
No.
She's right inside you.
That's true. I hear them both talking to me quite regularly and advising me. And I can feel their smiles. I feel so much. I do believe that I am guided all the time.
Good. Now, where will you send this letter? I mean, it should be in your handwriting on beautiful stationery. Where will you mail it? Because I think love letters should really be mailed.
That's a very interesting question.
Mm-hmm. It should show up on somebody's mail pile, a letter. What about mailing it to yourself?
I think perhaps then.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's too sacred to go anywhere else.
Okay.
And I think I'd like to open up and remind myself what
yes,
I said.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that would be wonderful. And then you keep it someplace in a treasure box.
Of course.
And you know what? Let somebody find it in 3 generations in some stuck to some drawer, and they'll know something important.
Beautiful.
I mean, you're part of this history of changing the world for the disabled.
I believe, and many other causes. This is just only the beginning.
Well, this is just today. I know that. But you know, when somebody finds this letter in 80 years, and we have letters from Henry VIII that look like they were handwritten yesterday, they last for a long time.
Yep.
They're going to know something important. Some historian's going to go nuts with happiness over this. probably get a PhD off of your letters.
I
just
hope they
think
laugh.
About it. They will. They will. Oh, darling, I want to thank you for doing this with
thank
me.
You.
You are such a joy just to look at
and
to listen to.
Thank you.
Oh, and please remember, if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, that writing a love letter, anytime you do it, is a special occasion.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Until next time, this is Janet Gallen and
Michelle Spitz.
Saying goodbye.